Welcome to the Tanz im August Podcast. This podcast series is part of the Tanz im August Festival, presented by HAU Hebel am Ufer. This year, it takes place from 15th to the 31st of August in 9 locations in Berlin. Several artists from this year's program have been invited to participate in a conversation. Each episode seeks to offer insights into their creative process, uncovering what's behind the decisions they made and the knowledge they gained along the way. The artists tell listeners about their current and past projects, revealing detailed information about the work that will be presented during Tanz im August. In this episode, Ricardo Carmona, artistic director of the festival, talks with Dorothy Muñanesa. She will present her new work Umoko on 15th, 16th and 17th of August at HAU 1.
Hello, Dorothy. It's nice that we talk together. You're still in the process of rehearsing the piece that we're going to present in August. And to start the conversation, I would like for you to introduce yourself.
My name is Dorothy Muñanesa. I am a multidisciplinary artist, though of late, the term choreographer and musician apply mostly.
Thank you. So the work that we're going to present in August is called Umoko, which is also the name of a tree. Can you tell us a bit more about this tree?
Yes, indeed. Umoko is a tree I grew up with because I'm from Rwanda and I grew up until I was 12 years old in Rwanda. And the country itself has many hills. It's very green. The land, the soil is dark orange or bright orange, depending on where you are. You have different kinds of families of trees, birds, natural beings. And there was one tree that particularly struck me even when I was a little child because of its flamboyant flowers. They're like bright, bright, extremely bright red. So if you see it amid green trees or green plants, it really stands out. And normally it's by itself. It doesn't grow in a group of trees. It's really like a singular tree that grows more or less autonomously. And it's an indigenous tree and a wild tree. So you don't normally plant it. It's not man planted or it's not human planted. I think maybe the birds are active in how it's disseminated across the country. And this tree, when I was a child, I used to be really struck by it. One day when I was visiting my grandparents who lived outside of Kigali, I asked my grandmother, what kind of tree was that? And she explained to me that it was called Umoko. And Umoko has another name, which is Umurinzi. And in traditional Rwandan mythology, I would say that Umurinzi means the keeper. So back in the day when Byangombe, who used to be this divinity, was hit by a bull, he flew in the air and was welcomed by the branches of Umoko. And while his life was slowly slipping away from him, his blood is believed to have drenched the branches and given this color to these flowers. And so in this mythology, this Umurinzi is where people gathered to remember, to reflect, to commemorate ancestral knowledge, ancestral beings, and to be linked to the soil, to be linked to the earth, to the ground itself, but also to this uplift, to the skies. So Umurinzi for me and Umoko now is this tree that holds so much memory linked to my own childhood, linked to my own grandmother, let's say, to my own grandparents, to my ancestors. And at the same time, it still grows today. It has made it over, I think, many centuries and still stands today. I still see it. Whenever I see it in Rwanda, I literally, even recently last year, we were driving to go somewhere with my family and I stopped them right in the middle of the street. And I was like, please, please, please stop. And I had to run out and go look at it. It really attracts me. It's an attractive tree And particularly to me, it really has this magnetic elegance that I felt drawn towards ever since I was a child.
Well, thank you for sharing that. It's a very beautiful stories. And I do believe that actually storytelling plays an important role in your artistic development and also in your creations. Why do you think it's that?
Thank you, Ricardo. I think storytelling is definitely something I inherited from my grandmothers, my maternal and paternal grandmothers, but also from my own parents. So my father, I grew up with a father who is now a retired reverend, a pastor. And my mother used to be, when I was really young, a journalist. So stories and what is said, what is told, whether it was told by through proverbs, whether it was told through stories, whether it was told through, let's say, biblical or religious vocabularies, or through the medium of radio. I love stories. I felt like there's something beautiful in how we transmit knowledge through storytelling. And for me, it's really necessary that somehow we lend an attentive ear to stories, because it tells something about a people. It tells something about a period in time, a history or histories. And so the question of transmission and storytelling is where the power lies in my work also, because I feel like I am, or my work can be a medium for storytelling. It can be a language of storytelling, whether it's also going through the body as a choreography, or through the music, or through its notes, or through the variety of languages, because also the polyphony of storytelling comes through languages and the use of language and words and breath. So yes, stories are definitely something I always care about and pay attention to, because it does talk about, it basically centers the stories or the peoples whose stories we are telling.
Yeah, totally. And do you think that actually that dance is also a way of storytelling?
Yes, absolutely. Dance is a powerful language because itself has codes. It has layers. It can be transmitted from, I don't know, in a private sphere or in a public sphere or in a land, let's say, a country, every place, every people. All peoples have a physical language, let's say a choreographic language, a dance language, or dance languages, or dances that have languages. And so in dancing, there is also a storytelling through the movements that are articulated or sort of being transmitted within these particular bodies, because it is a choice in how we choreograph, in how we talk using this particular language that is choreography. And for me to be able to gather artists that dance or that use dance and movement as a language, it's an incredible privilege, because whether one is able-bodied or not able-bodied has still a language that one can adhere to and be close to or felt moved by. Basically, it's a movement. The movement itself is language. And even when one is not moving or speaking, that itself is also a language. So yes, definitely dance is a very, very, for me, undeniable language. Yeah. And way of telling a story.
You just mentioned now a group of people and group of artists that also work with you.
Mm.
So collaboration actually is a very important aspect of your work. Can you tell us a bit more about the collaborators that you have for this project?
Yes. For me, it really happened. It's really about encounters always in my work. It's at the core of the work that is happening. Once I have an idea, once the idea is born in my mind or it's conceived, it's basically the encounters that then follow this conception, or that are at the heart of this conception. And these collaborators I have met over the years now are all from Rwanda. And they're all of a younger generation than myself. And they come from different disciplines. So there are five of them, four boys, four young men, and one young woman. It's the first time I actually choreograph predominantly for men or young men, which is also a very exciting and rare occasion. So I'm really enjoying it. So there is Abdul Mujambere, who is the first one that I actually met about 7-8 years ago. I saw his work online on Instagram, and I really liked, because I think I was hungry, or I was searching for young people within the artistic field in Rwanda. And he was the first one that came up and struck me by his dedication and how he practices movement in his practice. He's also a photographer, he's a filmmaker, he's a designer, he makes clothes. So it's like he's a non-inclusive artist. And when I saw his work, I really felt like I wanted to follow him. So I invited him to be part of this young generation I was mentoring through a program that was happening in Germany, actually in Mannheim. And it was very interesting to see him in that context. And then when I went back to Rwanda for different personal visits, I also was lucky to meet Imakanizi, who is a wonderful Intore. So Intore is what I would translate as the chosen one. Basically, they are the ones who have been selected to be part of the national, for example, the National Ballet of Rwanda. So he's a dancer, he's a singer, he's a musician, drummer. And in Rwanda, it's the drums that we play are called ingoma, or the drums that are played particularly by men, even though there is a group of women who are introducing a new way of playing drums. And he is really someone I saw again in one of YouTube videos from the National Ballet, Urukerereza. And though there are many of them, there's like 20 dancing on stage, but Imakanizi just hit me. He really like stood out, and I was like, who is this young man? So I searched for him for many, many years, for maybe a 2-3 years, until I went to this opening in Rwanda, in Kigali, art opening, and he was there. I almost had a heart attack. I was like, oh, I have been searching for you. You don't know how long I've been looking for you. And so I knew immediately by how just meeting him in person confirmed the intuition I had about him. So he was the second person, let's say, that I desired to join to this project. And then I met Makembe Michael, who is also a musician, singer, recording artist. He's a producer for musicians, particularly in the rap industry in Rwanda. He's really like one of the youngest, most experimental and sort of bold producers. And he's really doing a lot of incredible work for the rap scene. And as I love rap, and particularly rap coming from the continent, I was very excited by him. And the other thing that really excited me in our meeting is the fact that he is opening the first sound or sonic museum in Rwanda, where he wants to archive music from back in the colonial, pre-colonial era to today. And so he has endeavored to go around the country recording women from rural areas, fishermen, farmers, everybody who has a story to tell through music particularly. And he's recording them. And I find that this take, or this way he has of basically going around the country, is in a way taking hold of our story again. And taking hold of it is really something that we have been missing, because most of the archives, for example, have been taken away from Rwanda, put into museums in Germany or in Belgium for colonial purposes. And so having a young person who's bringing back these sounds, enriching them with the recordings he's doing, and then using them today in, for example, samples that he uses with rap artists or other musicians or for himself, makes the music totally whole, wholesome, because it's like he's coming back to that space where it all started, but also projecting it in a incredible, futuristic, experimental space. And the young woman, Yvette Fasha, I met her thanks to Abdul Mujambere, because I was also interested in finding young girls, because I'm always young women, because I'm always working, collaborating with women in my work. But this one, I was eager to meet dancers from Rwanda who are female, because it's not something that is common because it takes a lot of courage also to dedicate oneself to this art form. And what I also admired about Yvette is the fact that she is a young mother. So this also touched me in a particular way. It was quite exceptional to meet young woman dancing, but also who is raising a child by herself and still dedicated to this art. So for me, she was like a winner. I was like, okay, I got you. Let's work. And she's an incredible, beyond all of that, of course, she's an incredible, incredible dancer. And the last one, who is also the youngest of the group, is Jean-Patient Rubana, whom I met a couple of years ago at the music school, Nyundo Music School, which is like the only, let's say, music school in Rwanda, national music school. And he was there as a last year student, and he plays an instrument called inanga. It's a string instrument that is very ancient and ancestral and integral to Rwandan culture. And the way he was playing this instrument, accompanying a young rap artist from the school as well, made me very excited to see how one can link this instrument to this art, to this language that is rap. And just his energy, his vibe was so contagious. I was very drawn to him. And when I saw him smiling, he reminded me of someone. And I asked him, where is he from? And then as he was about to answer me, I was like, are you not Sofiane Zaisenga's son? And Sofiane Zaisenga is one of the inanga players in Rwanda. And normally it's an instrument played by men, but Sofia was trained by her father, so Jean-Pascal's grandfather, who, and now Sofia is really a well-known instrumentalist, and meeting her son was just such an honor. So yeah, these five incredible young artists are my collaborators for Omuko.
Yeah, we have an amazing team. I think everyone that is listening to this is going to be, I really want to see them on stage. Yeah, amazing. Yeah.
So we make here a small pause to inform that since the recording of this podcast episode, there was a change in the cast. So therefore, we ask Dorothea to introduce the new performer, and then we continue with our conversation.
Yes, thank you. So the new performer's name is Cedric Mizero, whom I first met back in 2017. It was through his Instagram page. And back then I was searching for young Rwandan artists in various disciplines, and Mizero's work really struck me. I reached out to him, and so began what would be in turn a long distance correspondence that spanned over the past 7 years, really. I finally met Cedric Mizero in person in Kigali last year in January 2023. We took time to talk about his rich art form, which includes photography, filmmaking, video installation, weaving, making clothes, movement and sculpture. And what I also loved and admire about Cedric Mizero is the community with which he creates. Whether they are fellow artists or artisans from certain far-removed areas in Rwanda. He is truly a multidisciplinary artist, and the way with which he creates is very intentional, culturally relevant, bold, and resolutely brilliant. While I was rehearsing with the rest of the artistic crew in Kigali in 2023, he would sometimes come and spend time with me and the other artists, and his presence always brought us so much joy. And the fact that he has already collaborated with some of the artists present in Omuko made his presence all the more enjoyable. So when I decided to replace Yvette Nyonfasha 10 days actually before the premiere, which was a radical decision to make, I intuitively reached out to him, and he accepted by saying that ever since I'd actually told him about Omuko and what my intentions were for this piece, he felt drawn to it. And though he acknowledged it would be something that would require a lot of work, he accepted the feat, and he's been working so hard. And when we met in Paris in May, just before the premiere, I was so thrilled and thankful that he was part of this creation. And I find that Cedric Misero really completes this quintet that they are with Jean Patient Mbana, Akaizu Imakanizi, Michael Makembe, and Abdul Mujambere. And I'm just so, so happy that together they make this formidable umuko.
Thank you.
And I think most of them, or almost all of them, also you included, have a very strong relationship with music.
Yes, yes, yes. We definitely have a very strong relationship to music. For me, music and dance, whether it's in this piece, but also for them in on an individual level, intimate level, music is omnipresent. So yeah, we definitely are connected through music as well.
So can we expect some musical presence in the piece?
Oh, you can definitely expect music in this piece. There's music throughout. There is rhythm throughout. There is sound almost throughout. So yes, definitely music is there. There is so inanga, this instrument. There is a guitar. There are drums. There are what we call amayudi, which are these bells that one wears on the ankles. There are claps, voice. Yeah, it's there. It's there.
Yeah, great. And how do you, so we are now in the middle of the process of creation. So you're going to premiere next month.
Yes.
And how is the process going also with this new group of people, and where are you in the creation moment?
Well, we have had a chance to rehearse over three periods of time in Rwanda. So I've been going back and forth to Rwanda to rehearse with them. I once had a chance of 2 months last year in January, February, and then I went back in the summer of 2023, went back again this year in January for almost 3 weeks. And in February, actually, I was invited to show a work in progress, which also I really was taking to heart because it was important for me to show something to a Rwandan crowd, let's say, even though not everybody in present was Rwandan. So I would say that I'm almost there. I have the backbone and the skeleton is there, the flesh is, the muscles are on. Now we're just going to also work on, let's say, the technical creation, which is for light and also costumes. And I have now next week, 2 weeks coming up in Lyon, in Maison de la Danse. I'm rehearsing there with them. They're arriving at the end of this week. And then we have another set of days, almost like 2 weeks, no, almost 2 weeks in Paris, in Chaillot, in May, which is going to be basically the last set of leg of rehearsals. So I would say that I'm 80% there. Or for me, it's almost done, really.
Yeah, great. It's good to hear that. Yeah, because actually we are recording this talk in beginning of April, so there's still some time to go, but it looks that you already have a lot of things set.
Yes.
And you just mentioned that you had this showing in Kigali, and it was during the Triennale of Kigali in Rwanda. How was the reception of this showing there?
As I was saying, it was really important for me that I share umuko, because umuko is something that is a word or a tree that is known to a lot of people, but not to all people. So I think it's intriguing for a Rwandan audience to hear about or to watch a piece about umuko, though there is no umuko on stage. There is no tree on stage. There is no such thing. It's a gathering, let's say, around this tree or the idea of this tree that I have. I was very excited to see people coming in. It was a full house, extremely full house, very hot space. My mother was even present. My aunt was there. So I was very honored to share this work with them in that moment and to see how it resonates. It was like there was a frequency and we were vibrating somehow on this frequency. And so the gathering in itself, in hearing certain notes, hearing something that sounds familiar, because one thing I forgot to mention, for example, for Jean Patient Mbana, who plays this inanga instrument, it's an instrument that is, it's so present in a lot of traditional oral heritage that we have. And so it's the way, it's an instrument that accompanies history telling, storytelling. So it's there. When you are familiar with Rwandan culture, you know what this sound is. You know when you hear inanga. But at the same time, what's exciting is that with Camille Fraché, who is accompanying me in the sound creation, there is something experimental in how we are transforming also these sounds and transforming these soundscapes. And so what seems familiar or what is familiar becomes new. So it was nice to hear or to see the audience, this Rwandan audience, vibrating on this new sound and sort of receiving these new sounds and at the same time recognizing themselves in certain movements, in certain words, in certain rhythms, though Umuko has been transformed. It's no longer that which we are used to. It's a new kind of language. So I was very excited to see that it was resonating. They were bopping their heads to certain moments. They were clapping along sometimes. And not just the Rwandan crowd, huh? Because there were like a lot of Europeans present in the room. And I also felt they were somehow also responding. There was something about almost, you know how in certain songs we have a call and response. There was a calling and there was a response. There were callings and responses. And it was nice to feel this energy coming from the room and being, and not being on stage, because I'm not on stage, mind you. It's something that, it's a new space for me, being off stage and looking at them and sort of receiving their energy and their strength and their elegance and their, again, this word flamboyance, I feel like it's the word that really conjures their spirit. And so it was very nice. I was very moved by it and moved by this young generation, this future generation.
You mentioned already several times about the fact that they are actually different generation from yours. Mm. Do you feel that there's a generation shift happening in the artistic field in Kigali, also Rwanda in general?
I don't know if it's a shift as such, but it's definitely ongoing. It's an ongoing shift. Somehow the younger generation, the young generation are somehow using whatever tools they have, though I'm not saying that our elders didn't, or the artists that happened to do what they did before us didn't. But for me, there is something about their audacity and their ways of just expanding. Like, it's like an expansion with what they have. It's like a multiplying. Even them, they are touching many, many things. Like I was talking about Abdul being a photographer, choreographer, dancer. Like, there is so much that they are using as languages to create this language of audacity. And so this shift maybe is there in the fact that they know clearly on whose shoulders that they're standing. They know clearly what foundations they're building on. And at the same time, they are unafraid to leap, to take a leap into the unknown. And this is something that I really feel that connects, that somehow I feel attracted to and that connects them to me. And that's why I'm talking about this Umuko again. It's like they are the Imiko of tomorrow. They are the Imiko of today. Ejo in Kinyarwanda means yesterday and tomorrow. And so for me, Umuko, this show, this performance piece, this Umuko that I want to celebrate is them, is the fact that they are absolutely, these five, but not just them, are connected to Ejo yesterday. They know their history. They know the stories that have been told. And at the same time, they are creating new stories or centering new stories. And that is something that I feel so exciting, like it's so excited about. And maybe this is where the shift is happening. It's like, how do we keep renewing our stories? How do we keep renewing our energy and how we want to be remembered and to live right now?
Yeah, thank you. I wanted to go back a bit before what we started to speak before, also how you integrated these all aspects in song, in history and choreography also in your work. So last year, you presented a work also during Tanzania August called Tua Mwa Tituba. Do you see a connection between the two works, or for you, it's a different body of creation?
Well, there is something, of course, that is similar in a sense that Tua Mwa Tituba was about bringing or embodying or celebrating yet again someone whose life or whose existence had been denied. And the ramifications of this particular existence of Tituba impacts African descendants dispersed around the world. And so there is this idea that Tua Mwa Tituba is bringing into a space the dispersed and creating a space of commemoration and a space of celebration and a space of remembering and elevating and recentering this story, this name behind which so many names lie. And at the same time, there is an intimate line that links me to my own grandmothers, because particularly they themselves have somehow healed me, because Tituba was accused of witchcraft. And at the same time, one forgets that she had knowledge, indescribable knowledge about plants, about people, about living, the living and the invisible and the visible. And so somehow she connected me a lot to my own maternal and paternal grandmothers. So there's something intimate to my story that connected me to Tituba, but also to Elsa Dorlin, the philosopher, and her own great-grandmother, Isabel. And so the celebration, let's say, is towards these figures, these forgotten figures, but that still stand within our lineage. And this question of lineage and storytelling somehow is still there with Omuko, because I'm a little bit obsessed with this idea of how do we remember? Who do we remember? Who is non-remembered? Who is erased from this space of remembering? And it resonates quite particularly at the moment when we are commemorating for the 30th anniversary the genocide committed against the Tutsi in Rwanda. So the idea of commemoration goes beyond, of course, my intimate personal historical self. It sips through my work, and Umuko is somehow linked again, because it's like I connected to the dispersed, and now I'm coming back to the roots. I'm coming back to the source. I'm coming back to these people, to a particular people, not because they are my ancestors, not because they are those from the past, but because they are of the future. They are the people of the future. And so we can look towards the future when we know what has happened in the past. So Tituba, whether it's linked to me or this story is not directly linked my own, because I have no familiar, let's say, intimate relationship to Tituba, but the way that she connects me to the Afro-descendant, African diaspora, brings me back yet again to my land. But where I would say it's different, let's say, maybe it's in its in the colors. It's a piece that I want so celebratory and so, like, there is a brilliance to it. Like, of course, it's rooted also in the, not everything is joyful, let's say. There is pain in these stories, in these histories, but there is something about Omuko that makes me want to shift into a harmonious tone. Like even working with Stéphanie Couder, who is the one who also made my costumes for Tua Mwa Tituba, there is still this thread. Like there is still the way she creates her these volumes that we wear on stage. There is still this, I'm insisting still with her. I'm insisting again in how through fabric we create other fabrics of stories, through volumes that we inhabit as a costume, we still create a bond between different works. So there is something similar, or there is a similarity within different works of mine that I'm really inviting Stéphanie to work with me on. But at the same time, there is so much color, but color that is different from, for example, the other previous piece where I gathered African and Afro-descendant artists on stage with me. But yeah, there is another energy that I'm conjuring in Umuko, like, maybe you can hear it in my voice. I don't know. It's a very exciting and very, I want it to be both experimental and at the same time very bright, like bright, really, like there's something very that goes deeper than the earth and out. It's like a source, you know, like it's erupting outwardly.
Yeah, thank you. I can definitely hear this in your voice, and also the enthusiasm that you speak about the work is really touching. Yeah. I think this is a beautiful way to also to finish our talk here, and yeah, I hope that really people can join us then in August to see the work live.
I hope so too. And yet again, thank you, Ricardo, for being part of this journey and for believing in it and for welcoming us in the space to share Umuko. It's wonderful. It's an honor.
Thank you. Thank you.